This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Breyer to retire. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Thursday, January 27th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is expected to retire at the end of the current term. We'll analyze the politics of replacing him.
The Federal Reserve is hinting that a hike in its key interest rate is coming in March. You'll hear from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell.
The U.S. has set another record for newly reported COVID fatalities. Meanwhile, the Omicron death toll is now worse than Delta.
And the U.S. has delivered a written response to Russia's demands regarding Ukraine, but separately, why is Washington giving the issue so much attention? Is it to distract from the Biden administration's struggles, as some suggest?
There are actually a very real 125,000 Russian troops stationed along the border. You know, Biden's not making up a distraction here.
Ben Wolfgang at the Washington Times on questions about the U.S. role in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. An official announcement could come today that Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is retiring. His plans have been a focus of Democratic concern after the September 2020 death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg allowed Republicans to replace a liberal with a young conservative in Justice Amy Coney Barrett. That locked in a 6-3 conservative majority just before Democrats recaptured power. At 83, Justice Breyer is the court's oldest member. Senate Democrats said they would move quickly to fill his vacancy. He was appointed by President Clinton in 1994. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
He was a model jurist. He had huge impact on people's lives in terms of voting rights, women's rights and reproductive rights, in terms of the environment, and maybe most of all on the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, making sure it stayed.
There have been months of sometimes harsh demands from activists regarding Mr. Breyer's retirement. One pressure group hired a billboard truck to drive around Capitol Hill with the message, quote, Breyer, retire. Well, the retirement of Justice Breyer at the end of the current term gives President Biden an opportunity to shore up the court's liberal wing for decades and deliver on his promise to nominate the court's first black woman. A forward look at the politics of his replacement from Alan Sanders, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in New Jersey. Alan, what was your reaction when the news broke?
Well, it was anticipated that there has been a lot of talk that he should have retired last year, and there was continued talk about it this year. He kept this decision close to the vest. He still hasn't officially announced it, but he is expected to do so very soon. And so it's not really a surprise. A lot of people were talking about it, and it has finally happened. And I think he didn't want the same thing to happen to his decision to retire that happened to Justice Ginsburg, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He wanted a Democratic president to pick his successor.
I assume he felt the pressure that he got from the outside to step down, at least a little, no?
Yeah, I'm sure he understood what was at stake. I mean, he understood the pressure put on him. He also understood the pressure for the future of jurisprudence in the United States, and he understood that the court already has a 6-3 conservative majority, and he felt important, I'm sure, that it shouldn't be a 7-2 majority, and that right now the opportunity exists for the Democrats, both a Democratic president and a Democratic-controlled Senate, to select his successor.
So Justice Breyer was seen as kind of the de facto liberal leader of that particular wing, the leader of the liberal wing. Does the person who comes in assume that mantle also, or I don't know, because of seniority, somebody else takes that title?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court is a small group of people, and group dynamics is what really governs a lot of what goes on there. And, of course, political philosophy, judicial philosophy. Whether one is a leader of a particular wing of the court really depends on their intellectual force, the force of their intellect, of their arguments, the reasonableness of what they pursue and argue, and whether it's convincing. And so whoever succeeds him probably will not be an intellectual force at the beginning. You kind of have to judge what's going on in the court, where your colleagues stand, and what is the dynamics at the Supreme Court. But there is certainly the potential for any new justice, whether it's this one or any other down the line in the future, to become an intellectual force. It just depends on the talents of the individual and the group dynamics that are at work at that particular time.
We're speaking with Alan Sanders, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. And we're talking about the pending retirement of Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer. How about this now, the timing here in January, becoming a political issue for the midterm campaigns?
Well, it could certainly activate people on both sides of the political divide. Joe Biden has the chance to, to select someone, and by that choice, to activate Democrats around the country, saying this is the kind of person that he believes in. This is the kind of person he believes should be judges, not just at the Supreme Court level, but at all levels of the federal judiciary. And then, of course, the Republicans will have a chance to activate and argue why the selection that Joe Biden makes is not appropriate for the court. So this has the potential to bring the court back into the mainstream of political arguments going into the midterm elections.
Given that the Senate is evenly divided politically, could Vice President Kamala Harris cast the deciding vote?
Well, she could very well do that. It's an evenly divided Senate, and there are five senators in particular that are useful to watch. Of course, Sinema and Manchin on the Democratic side, but you've got Murkowski, Romney, and Collins on the Republican side. These are people who are considered to be moderates. That is to say, they don't always vote along the lines that their party wishes them to vote, and so we'll have to see. Now, it should be pointed out that Sinema and Manchin have voted for all the Biden judicial picks so far. And so there's a great feeling that they'll likely support the nominee that Biden selects. If that's the case and there are no Republicans, then yes, Kamala Harris would have the deciding vote. You only need a majority of the Senate to confirm Supreme Court justices, and it could be, depending on how things work out, that the vice president will make that decision and cast the deciding vote.
Heard a name or two that might be at the top of Mr. Biden's list?
Well, there are three names that are being bandied about right now. Of course, only the president knows whether these are serious contenders. But there's Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson of the District of Columbia U.S. Court of Appeals. She was already confirmed, and Sinema and Manchin voted for her when she was confirmed for that position. There's also Justice Leandra Kruger. She serves on the California Supreme Court. And there's Judge Michelle Childs, nominated for the D.C. U.S. Court of Appeals. She's now a district court judge. The interesting thing about Judge Childs is that she has the backing of South Carolina Congressman James Clyburn. Mm. And as we all know, Clyburn has been sort of a kingmaker for Joe Biden, and so she could be an important selection. But we'll have to watch and see how it turns out.
Thanks, Alan. Alan Sanders, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in New Jersey. The U.S. has given Russia the answers to its demands regarding Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said a written reply has been sent to the Kremlin with proposals to dial back military competition in Europe as concerns grow about a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mr. Blinken says the letter, which will not be made public, includes the ways the Biden administration believes NATO can collaborate with Russia on international security if they're serious.
The document we've delivered includes concerns of the United States and our allies and partners about Russia's actions that undermine security, a principled and pragmatic evaluation of the concerns that Russia has raised, and our own proposals for areas where we may be able to find common ground.
Russia has demanded guarantees that NATO never admit Ukraine and other former Soviet nations as members, and that the alliance roll back troop deployments in other former Soviet bloc countries, a region Moscow still views as its sphere of interest. Mr. Blinken reiterated that NATO would not abandon its open-door policy for any nation to join. The way you use the internet has changed dramatically over the last decade, but security tools for the most part have stayed the same. Between your photos, finances, devices, and connections, your world is more online than ever. Aura provides complete digital security all in one easy-to-use app. Aura protects you from the worst of the internet so you can still enjoy the best of it with digital security protection to keep your online finances, personal info, and tech safe from threats. It gives me peace of mind to know Aura protects me from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and so much more with one simple subscription. All plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds, and experienced U.S.-based customer support is ready to help. For a limited time, Aura is offering our listeners a 30-day free trial when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get complete protection, huge savings, and a 30-day free trial. That's A-U-R-A, aura.com/Gordon. Aura, the new standard in digital security.
Thanks for being with us. If the battle against inflation were a boxing match, there's a sense that the bell just rang and the Federal Reserve put in its mouth guard. At the end of its meeting yesterday, the Fed held its key interest rate near zero, but said it will soon be appropriate to raise it, hinting that a rate hike in March is all but certain. The increase would be the first in more than 3 years and kick off what's likely to be a flurry of three or more quarter point increases this year aimed at reining in sharply rising consumer prices. Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
In light of the remarkable progress we've seen in the labor market and inflation that is well above our 2% longer run goal, the economy no longer needs sustained high levels of monetary policy support.
Speculation about the widely expected move has been a major reason for the stock market's sharp sell-off this month. The Fed's statement wiped out the market's gains yesterday. The S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average were lower by a fraction. Mr. Powell left the door open to raising rates at consecutive policy meetings, which are held roughly every 6 weeks. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is retiring, setting President Biden up with his first opportunity to fill a vacancy on the high court. The 83-year-old justice is expected to step down at the end of the current Supreme Court term early this summer. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The president has stated and reiterated his commitment to nominating a black woman to the Supreme Court and certainly stands by that.
Breyer was appointed by former President Clinton. Breyer's replacement will need to be confirmed by the Senate.
Number two.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. has delivered a document to Moscow that lays out a serious diplomatic path forward should Russia decide against invading Ukraine.
It's far preferable to resolve these differences peacefully, consistent with our principles, than it would be to have renewed regression, renewed conflict, and everything that will fall from that. But the point is, we're prepared either way.
Blinken says the document sets forth areas and ideas of how Washington and Moscow can work to advance collective security interests.
Number three.
One body has been found amid an ongoing search for 38 people missing from a boat that capsized last weekend off the Florida coast. Coast Guard Captain Joanne Burdian.
The longer they remain in the water without food, without water, exposed to the marine environment, the sun, the sea conditions. It is every moment that passes, it becomes much more dire and unlikely that anyone could survive in those conditions.
The search began Tuesday after a man clinging to a capsized boat was found by sailors on a passing ship. President Biden has signed an executive order making sexual harassment a crime under military law, a change spurred by lawmakers' growing frustration at the military's inability to tackle the problem. Under the order, which takes effect immediately, troops can be charged under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which allows prosecution of crimes outlined by the president. Well, these stories never get old. A wood and wicker chair that was purchased for $7 at a thrift store in Brighton, England, has been auctioned off for more than $21,000 when it was identified as the work of an early 20th century artist. The person who bought the chair thought it looked really interesting and started emailing pictures to museum experts, who then confirmed it was indeed a 1902 rarity.
How come we never stumble into something like that?
I don't know. You got to go to more thrift stores.
I guess so. Thank you, Jen. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to smartphones, everyone has a camera in their pocket, right? With people documenting everything, nearly every social occasion tends to end up online. Eventually, your image is bound to show up in some posts that you don't like. Dalvin Brown, reporter at The Wall Street Journal, says before you stress,
consider your options. Dalvin, what should we know?
So if you're in a public place, then legally, whoever takes the photo has the copyright. And so since they have the copyright, they can legally, generally speaking, post it wherever they would like to. But yeah, that's in a public context. It's a little different if you're in private, there may be grounds for a lawsuit.
So like if somebody's inside someone's home at a party, that's not considered public, right?
Correct. Inside someone's home at a party, you can take photos and be fine, generally speaking. So that's where we get into the etiquette and sort of social acceptance piece of this. Because, you know, just because you can legally take a photo of someone and post it online, especially your friend, doesn't mean that you should. And that's why I was speaking to some etiquette coaches on how to best navigate that situation.
We're speaking with Dalvin Brown, personal technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called How to Avoid Unwanted Photos on Social Media. All right, so what about the likes of Twitter and Facebook? They have their own rules?
Yeah, so that's what's really interesting. So Twitter is the most strict, and late last year announced that you can no longer post photos of other people without their consent. So again, you know, if you take a group photo and everyone in the photo doesn't consent to being in the photo, someone can report it on Twitter and it'll be taken down. The rules are a little different on Facebook and Instagram, where they will take down intimate photos of people that are posted without their consent. But posting a group photo without, you know, without asking everyone pictured won't really get you into trouble on Facebook. And there's not an option to report that photo as simply unwanted.
Oh, wow. Okay. So how about, as you point out in the story, temporarily disabling your account?
Yeah. So one of the reasons why people may want photos taken down on social media is, you know, perhaps they're looking for a job or just want to clean up their digital persona. And so if you want those photos taken down, you obviously can reach out to the person and ask them to take it down, but you could also deactivate your account. And then that just makes it harder for whoever's looking you up to see photos of you, photos that you're tagged in. Those photos don't disappear. They're still out there, but you don't have a profile or an account for them to see them on.
Thanks, Dalvin. Dalvin Brown, personal technology reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Podcasts have changed the way you get your news, entertainment, politics, everything. They've rewritten the script, literally. Well, there's another exciting development that's rewritten the script too, Masterworks. Masterworks enables you to diversify your portfolio and potentially protect it from market volatility by investing in contemporary art with Masterworks. They're the fintech startup shaking up the alternative investing landscape, letting you build a portfolio of fine art without spending millions. Basquiat, Picasso, Warhol. Invest in paintings by iconic artists like these with Masterworks. Their industry-leading research team has created the first and only platform where anyone can buy and trade shares of paintings, giving you the same access enjoyed by some millionaires and billionaires for generations. And now our listeners get priority access to their latest offerings at masterworks.art/Gordon. Join a new generation of investors at masterworks.art/Gordon. See important disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer.
The news, first, fast, and free of noise. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, January 27. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer to hang up his robe. The Fed hints at an interest rate hike in March. U.S. delivers a written response to Russia's demands regarding Ukraine. Today is International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Ford will stop accepting orders today for its Maverick compact pickup truck, citing high demand. The 40-game Jeopardy win streak is over for Amy Schneider, who earned $1.3 million. And Kansas City Chiefs fans donating to a Buffalo cause after their wild playoff game. That story in about 20 minutes. Here's a question about foreign policy that's being debated. Why does the U.S. care about Ukraine and a fight over obscure Soviet-era borders? After all, the U.S. has no treaty obligations to Ukraine. It's not close to home. It's not a member of NATO. And Ukraine has serious corruption problems. Meanwhile, the Biden administration is threatening the Kremlin with brutal sanctions and putting 8,500 American troops on high alert for possible deployment to Eastern Europe. Here's Ben Wolfgang, Pentagon correspondent at The Washington Times. Ben, take us through the debates.
Yeah, I mean, look, it sort of depends on, you know, where you come from, I guess, on the political spectrum. Certainly, there's a growing segment in the Republican Party, so what used to be the libertarian wing of the Republican Party, and now I think is kind of the more the Trump foreign policy wing of the Republican Party that says, well, maybe we shouldn't care as much because there isn't necessarily a strategic U.S. national security interest in Ukraine per se. In other words, if Russian tanks were to roll across the border tomorrow, how does that really affect people, you know, in Ohio or in Missouri or in Wisconsin, for example? And the truth is, I guess it necessarily doesn't by definition. However, I think when you start looking at these big picture geopolitical questions of what this would mean, there is a slippery slope argument to be made that if the domino falls where Vladimir Putin, once again, as he did with Crimea in 2014, feels like he can use military force to essentially annex parts of a country, or God forbid, in the worst case scenario, an entire country of Ukraine, I don't really see a scenario where he would just stop at that. Yeah. I think that does set a dangerous precedent because he's made very clear over decades now that he wants Russia to have a sphere of influence in that part of the world, through Eastern Europe, certainly through Central Asia. And so if you just essentially, if the West rolls over, if the U.S. does very little and lets him do that, I think it could set a pretty dangerous precedent. And as a lot of folks across the political spectrum have been warning over the past couple of weeks, that dangerous precedent doesn't stop necessarily in Europe or you know, at Ukraine, the Ukraine-Russia border.
All right. So President Biden, as you point out in the story, has had a very difficult first year. Can't pass legislation, it seems now. Obviously, inflation's running rampant. There are unchecked border crossings. His COVID management has come under question. Is this a distraction, the Russia-Ukraine issue?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's sort of multifaceted. In one sense, is there a part of sort of the Biden world, the national security staff at the White House, the State Department, the Pentagon, who are, I don't know if happy is the right word, but who sort of welcome the opportunity to project strength on the world stage, to get Biden out there talking tough against Vladimir Putin, to have Secretary of State Blinken and other folks out there making the rounds on talk shows every morning and doing press conferences every day to try to project U.S. strength and solidarity with NATO and a strong Western response to it. Yes, I think, frankly, they welcome the opportunity to do that because let's remember, I mean, sort of the whole concept of getting tough on Russia, standing up to Russia, where, you know, in Biden's view, Trump didn't. That was one of the core foreign policy planks of his campaign. This gives him, at least rhetorically, the opportunity to do that. Now, having said that, I think it's worth keeping in mind the distraction point of view. Some folks on, you know, in some certain circles politically have sort of likened this to the Wag the Dog, the classic Dustin Hoffman movie, where a president who's in peril essentially invents a crisis somewhere in some far-flung corner of the world to distract from that crisis. I don't think it's fair to cast this as something like that, because there are actually a very real 125,000 Russian troops stationed along the border. You know, Biden's not making up a distraction here.
Finish up, if you would, talking about how time may be on the side of Russian President Vladimir Putin here, and that he's hoping maybe, what, some division between the U.S. and some NATO allies.
We're already seeing it. And I think that's, to me, I think is the longer this goes on, and look, I mean, Putin's got the time. I think that's the thing. I think he's perfectly willing to keep these Russian troops on the border for essentially as long as they can, you know, be kept warm and fed and happy and the morale can remain high. I think he'll keep them there. And that's where I think the U.S. and its allies are going to start to run into problems. We're already seeing it over the past few days with Germany, for example, which doesn't want to send any weapons to Ukraine. There was a dust-up where they supposedly, now they've denied this, and Britain has also denied it, but there were reports late last week that they even denied flyover rights to British planes that were delivering equipment to the Ukrainian military. There's, of course, the issue of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline that has brought Germany and Russia very close together on economic and energy issues over the past few years. So there's sort of already some reluctance.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Wolfgang, Pentagon correspondent at The Washington Times. We have once again arrived at Friday Eve. Glad you're with us.
Oh, boy.
Time now for...
That was a big announcement there.
Well,
clear the decks, everybody. Friday Eve is here.
There's been some discussion on Twitter about how I deliver that.
Yes, yes. So everyone's waiting.
So, you know, if I say the Friday loudly, or if I say Eve loudly, or if it's Eve,
yeah.
Or if it's, what did you say last week? Leaning on the pronunciation of the V or
right,
the
yeah,
E.
Yeah, yeah. The E can sometimes be elongated to make it a little worse.
Friday Eve. Here we are. The mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, by now we're all familiar with the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, implying that if something is working, there's no reason to mess with a good thing. The one place that adage may not apply, however, is in the world of crime. Someone forgot to tell that to a New Jersey robber who had such a good time robbing a convenience store, he came back multiple times within the span of a week. The man who runs the store is elderly and doesn't move very well, which may have made it seem like a good mark for multiple robberies. But the overconfident crook ran into a problem the fourth time he came back that week, namely two police officers, one of which was the shop owner's son.
Ooh.
Together, the two officers wrestled the man to the ground and eventually arrested him.
How about that? The shop owner's son is a cop?
I mean, it's got to be the first rule of crime, right? Is to not come back. You don't come back to the scene of the crime, and certainly don't go back and try and rob the same place multiple times in a week with all the cameras we have. And of course, like he did, he called his son the cop in to try and help him out.
Wow. I mean, you've watched the same number of cop shows I have, right? Isn't it saying like 90% of criminals return to the scene of the crime?
Yeah.
For one reason or another?
And you know, and 100% of those people are in jail right now. So it's not the best strategy.
This guy's, he needs a better research team, too. He should have known that the shop owner's son was a cop.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's Girl Scout cookie season, which means that at some point you might be staring down the order form trying to figure out which flavors to order. Most of us have our favorites, but in case you need a push, we now have what's being touted as the definitive ranking of all 12 of the current varieties. This list was put together by Charles Curtis, who writes for USA Today's For the Win sports page. So it's chock full of subjectivity for us all to disagree with. Not a fan of lemon flavor, apparently. Curtis ranks the lemonades and lemon ups as the two least favorite, followed by the toffee-tastic, caramel chocolate chip, and the shortbread trefoils. The middle of the pack is populated by the do-si-dos, the brownie-inspired adventurefuls, and toast yay, which is French toast flavored. Now for the top of the heap, Curtis ranks the Girl Scout s'mores at number 4, followed by the Samoas thin mints, and coming in at number 1, the Tagalongs, described as the combination of chocolate and peanut butter as undefeated, which, along with the crispy cookie crunch, is a perfect bite every time.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a sports writer, you know, who knows a little bit about competition to get this list right.
Yeah, that's true.
This list is correct.
Right. You think so?
Yeah.
So you would say Tagalongs at number 1. That's controversial because a lot of people put Thin Mints or Samoas at number 1. Personally, I'm a Samoas guy, so Samoas are always going to be number 1 for me.
I'm a Samoas guy also.
Yeah.
But I could live with this list.
Yeah.
This is not worth debating in my maybe the lemon ups, there's like a little lemon flavored, I guess. I can't even keep track of all the flavors.
Yeah, see, I haven't had most of these because I go straight for the Samoas and don't even look back. You know, maybe the Thin Mints occasionally, but I haven't had half of these just for that reason. I'm not going to order any of these lesser flavors.
Well, and I like about the Thin Mints is because the word thin is in there, which means you can eat at least 6 and not feel guilty about it.
Yes, they feel like diet cookies, don't they?
Yes, exactly. Diet cookies. Thank you, Mike. If saving money is one of your top goals for 2022, then stop paying insane amounts of money every month for wireless. Switch to Mint Mobile. It's the easiest way to save this year. Since Mint Mobile is the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, they let you maximize your savings with plans starting at just $15 a month. At Mint Mobile, all plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Choose the amount of monthly data that's right for you and stop paying for data you never use. They've eliminated the traditional costs of retail and you get the savings. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, visit mintmobile.com/Gordon. That's mintmobile.com/Gordon. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com
/Gordon.
Your brain's morning workout. You're listening to America's First News This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. With cybercrime getting a lot of attention, there's been a less high-tech threat also emerging, a surge in stolen checks. David Mamon, criminal justice professor at Georgia State University, has written about it in MarketWatch. He says it typically goes like this. Someone breaks into a mailbox and swipes a check. Thieves may cash the checks themselves or sell them through an illicit marketplace. Prices are typically $175 for personal checks and $250 for business ones, payable in Bitcoin. Buyers then use nail polish remover to erase the intended payee's name and the amount, replacing those details with their own. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer will retire at the end of the current term, giving President Biden a crucial opportunity to replace the liberal justice. Breyer, at age 83, is the oldest member of the court. His departure gives Biden a chance to fulfill his campaign promise to nominate a black woman to the bench, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
In the Senate, we want to be deliberate. We want to move quickly. We want to get this done as soon as possible.
Number two.
The U.S. has provided Russia with written proposals to tamp down military competition in Europe, countering demands from Moscow and trying to avert what Western officials worry is a looming Russian invasion of Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the proposals could lead to discussions on ways to avoid confrontation.
You may well be right that Russia is not serious about this at all. But we have an obligation to test that proposition, to pursue the diplomatic path, to leave no diplomatic stone unturned.
Number three.
The Federal Reserve is signaling it could soon raise interest rates for the first time in 3 years, paving the way for a March liftoff as policymakers seek to keep prices under control and combat inflation. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says the economy doesn't need as much central bank support.
The improvements in labor market conditions have been widespread, including for workers at the lower end of the wage distribution, as well as for African Americans and Hispanics.
A rate increase would mark the first since December of 2018. Healthcare workers in about half the states face a deadline today to get their first dose of the COVID vaccine under a Biden administration mandate that will be rolled out across the rest of the country in the coming weeks. The mandate covers doctors, nurses, technicians, aides, and even volunteers at hospitals, nursing homes, home health agencies, and other providers that participate in the federal Medicare or Medicaid programs. Don't be surprised if you get invited to a wedding this year that will take place on a weekday. With some venues still backed up because of rescheduled weddings, an uptick in weekday nuptials will continue through the year. TheKnot.com says about 10% of weddings are scheduled for weekdays in 2022.
It's a good way to save a few bucks, too, right?
Absolutely.
You're getting married, man. Yep. Take that Wednesday wedding, a lot cheaper. Thank you, Jen. Thanks for spending time with us. The Buffalo Bills, as you may know, have proven to have one of the NFL's most charitable fan bases over the last few years, and Kansas City Chiefs fans followed suit after their team's divisional round win. Chiefs fans have donated more than $255,000 to Buffalo's O'Shea Children's Hospital after Kansas City's thrilling overtime victory last Sunday. CBS Sports says after a Facebook prompt, Chiefs fans began donating $13 each to the hospital. The $13 figure, of course, is a nod to the 13 seconds that the Chiefs had left on their final drive of regulation. Over 9,800 Chiefs fans initially flooded the hospital with donations after the win, totaling $178,000 in just 24 hours. Buffalo fans have long been generous to non-Bills charities. In 2021 alone, Buffalo fans contributed to Lamar Jackson's favorite charity after he suffered a concussion against the Bills in last year's playoffs. They also contributed $40,000 to a visual impairment charity, you might remember that, to poke fun at the blind refs working their Week 14 loss against Tampa Bay. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.